She's a feisty Southern girl who's worked with companies all over the world to develop content that connects them with their ideal customers. And now, she's cooking up all kinds of content marketing ideas in her virtual content lab, ideas that will help you grow your business. Here's the totally mad content marketing scientist and host of the Smarter Content Marketing Lab podcast, Michelle Lashley.
Hi there, and welcome to episode 4 of the Smarter Content Marketing Lab podcast. Today, we're going to be taking Melissa Eggleston into the lab with us. She is the co-author of a new book called The Zombie Business Cure, How to Refocus Your Company's Identity for More Authentic Communication. First, I love the whole zombie concept for the book, but second, and probably most important, is I love the focus of the book itself in terms of focusing on business identity. Having a strong business identity is something that is crucial to maximizing your success, whether you are a business of one or a business of 50,000 plus. And so Melissa's going to talk to us about the importance of business identity, how to achieve a strong business identity, and how to not be a zombie business. So with that, let's head into the lab. Thanks, Melissa, for joining us here on the Smarter Content Marketing Podcast. I really appreciate you taking time out to come talk to us about your book, your new book, and the things that you're doing. So if you could first just maybe just give us a little idea about what you do for a living other than authoring cool books.
Well, thanks for having me. So let's see. I spend about half of my time doing content strategy work for small businesses, nonprofits, universities, that sort of thing. So that's often the planning part of the content. For their websites mostly is where I tend to focus most of my time. The other kind of half, I would say 50, almost 60% of my time is spent doing user experience work. So that means making sure things are user-friendly, easy to find, well-organized on a website, that things are written for the web, that sort of stuff. So the two areas are very interlinked and interwoven. And so that's what I spend my time doing, and I'm a consultant. So I work with clients all over the place. I've worked with people in California and Arizona and New York and around the country, and it's fun because I get to see a lot of different kinds of businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, people don't think about the user experience part of websites when they're using them, but you know, if someone goes to a website and they can't find their way around, then they're not going to stay there very long. So you make sure that they will stick around.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. So, you know, user experience design is one of those things we kind of take for granted unless it's bad. And then if it's bad, we're frustrated and annoyed.
Exactly.
When it's good, we're not even thinking about it. We're just engaging with the content on the site, which is ultimately what you want somebody to do, right? You want people not to be fussing with your navigation. You want them just to be getting where they want to get and just enjoy the writing or the beautiful photos or whatever it happens to be that you're kind of putting out there.
Yeah, which gives me the thought that we're going to have to bring you back for another podcast to talk just about user experience, because that's super important.
Yeah, we'd love to talk about it.
Yeah.
I like to spread the UX love.
Absolutely. So today in this episode, we're going to be talking about this awesome new book that you and Julie Lellis have written called The Zombie Business Cure, How to Refocus Your Company's Identity for More Authentic Communication. So first of all, when I heard about this book, The Zombie Business Cure, I loved the title. So what was the inspiration that you and Julie had for, let me go ahead and mention too that you had a co-author, Julie Lellis, who is a professor at Elon University. So I want to give her some love with this too. But what was the inspiration for the title, The Zombie Business Cure?
Yeah, well, let me tell you. So Julie and I met because we lived on the same street for a while.
Oh, wow. Okay. That was serendipitous.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And so and we would talk a little bit both about her teaching and the things she was working through with her students. And I talked a lot with her about like the different clients and the problems I encountered. And so we finally sat down and we're like, we might have a book here to make together. We have a lot of overlap. And so we sat down in a cafe called Mad Hatter,
which is in Durham. North Carolina. Ugh, love that place.
Yeah. So we sat there and Julie talked a little bit about her dissertation research around identity. And I talked a lot about how clients were coming to me very caught up in the different tactics. You know, should I be on video? Should I be doing social media? Which social media should I be doing? They get caught up in that stuff and kind of miss the bigger picture of identity and who they are. And as we were talking, Julie kept saying, it's like they have to be fully embodied in like who they are. And she used this word embodied over and over. And I said, Julie, you really make me think of zombies when you say embodied.
Ah, like, right.
I just think of bodies.
Right.
And so that's kind of where we start talking is like, yeah, it's kind of like when you're kind of have some characteristics that are not very human, that are some of the characteristics of bad websites and bad communication, you tend to be pretty zombie-like. So we kind of flush that out more, but that's kind of where the title came from. And, you know, in the world of zombies, most of the time people just think you need to kill zombies. And we wanted to take a different approach and say, no, you can actually cure zombies. There's a little bit of a scale from human to zombie, and you can help, you know, organizations who are more on the zombie side move more towards the human side. And so it's a cure. And that's kind of where we came up with the zombie business cure.
Okay, that's very cool. And I have to say, my first experience with zombies was really The Walking Dead, which I loved that show. So when I saw a zombie, I was like, oh, this is going to be a great book.
Yeah, you know, it's almost funny. Every time we go to a conference and speak about zombies or that sort of thing, we usually have a couple people come up to us afterwards who are really zombie fans. And they want to engage with us because they think that we are really huge zombie fans. And the truth is, we didn't really know much about zombies. The analogy just worked when we were talking about what you fully want to be. And so we would spend time as we were reading and researching about going like, well, how do zombies get killed? Or like, what do they eat? And we were doing all this kind of odd research because I'd never seen The Walking Dead, for example. And
right.
I'd be asking my husband, well, how does it work? Like, do zombies, what do they do when something's loud? And, you know, so is their hearing any good? And it was really kind of a fun analogy that worked for us.
Yeah, it totally works. So you mentioned that really the focus of the book is obviously helping businesses become more human. But you also mentioned the business identity part. So could you speak a little bit about, you know, I know that's the focus. Could you speak a little bit about what business identity is versus what a business's brand is? Because I think there may be some, you know, because there is a difference, but could you just explain what you feel like the difference is between a business brand and a business's identity?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So that's a question that comes up a lot because these words are used very interchangeably at times. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're together. Brand identity
right,
comes up.
Exactly.
So it is confusing. So the way we view it and the way it was kind of laid out in our book is that your identity is constructed from your core values. And it is really the foundation. It's who you are and what you're about and what's important to you. And it's that identity that will attract the right audiences to you. And then there's a couple things that are built on top of that foundation of identity. And one is culture. That is something, you know, your shared assumptions and beliefs and behaviors that are adopted by whoever's in your company with you. And then there's brand kind of on top of that. And brand is something that is co-created by your audience and that sort of thing. The example that my co-author Julie has given a lot is when we think about Band-Aids, they're often associated with maybe a skinned knee when we were little and one of our parents helping us out.
Right.
So there's of these individual experiences. So brand to us is more out of your control because it's everybody's having an individual experience of the brand.
Okay.
Identity is a place that you get to control because it's who you are and what you're about. So in small organizations, brand and identity are going to be quite similar. There may not be a difference at all because it's just a small organization. It's not a huge conglomerate with multiple business departments, brand lines, that sort of thing. For most businesses, it's like one and the same, or even a university, it could be one and the same brand and identity. And ideally, you know, whatever experience people are having as like the brand, it's really matching the identity. It's not skewed away or it should feel very similar no matter what. But we think identity is something you can control, whereas brand is a little bit out of your control.
Right, because when we think about brand, that tends to be, we all often associate that word with personality, with the personality of the business. And I guess that does lend itself to a lot of interpretation by, you know, your target audiences, what they perceive your personality as
being. Brand is perception, right? Mm-hmm. And identity is reality. So there's a big difference there. So brand is the perception of the audience, and identity is who you really are. And ideally, those would be very similar, right? I want people to see my best self as my identity, and that's hopefully what they're getting through the brand message. But that just isn't always the case. So we say, you know, focus on your identity, focus on being, you know, your very best self as your organization, or if you're a sole proprietor, an entrepreneur, you know, then you can just control it and get away from even using the word brand is what I like to tell people. So we ran some focus groups with both communication professionals and with just regular old people. And we put out to them, like, what do you think is brand and what do you think is identity and that sort of thing? And a lot of people who are not in the communications field really have a negative connotation of the word brand.
Okay.
People would say words like spin, you know, rip off. The brand has this kind of constructed feel about it. And so there's times when I hear people talking about their personal brand and I just want to go, blah, you know,
like, right.
Brand, talk about you and talk about who you are and what you care about and don't make it into this constructed thing. Just focus on, you know, being, living your values really.
Okay. So identity really is then understanding who you are as a business in terms of what values you have at the very core.
Yes.
And then finding a way to live those values. And
you can, yeah, live and communicate those values, right? That's where we get content creation and that sort of thing is, are my values being reflected in the content I'm creating? Or do I look like somebody else? Or is it not clear who I am because my values aren't coming through?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think that's important because I think one place that businesses, you know, small businesses or medium-sized businesses or large businesses, I think sometimes they forget that, you know, they focus so much on what people are perceiving them as that sometimes they forget that you have to first really be sure about who you are as a business first. And, you know, before, you know, because I guess what I'm trying to say is that a lot of businesses, if they don't have a strong brand identity, then they wonder why, or they don't have a strong business identity, and they wonder why they're not getting traction with their audiences. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. From what you're saying, it sounds like, okay, well, if you don't have a strong business identity, if you don't know who you are as a business, then how can you possibly expect other people to understand who you are as a business?
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it. So I think of the whole internet, the whole world of where we're buying products and services as really a big matching game.
Yeah.
And it's dating. So I am trying out different services. I'm trying out different products. I'm interacting with different companies, trying to see like what fits me, mm-hmm. what matches me. And if you're not being very clear and putting out like who you are, what you're about, what this service is about, or this product, whatever it happens to be, it's hard for me to tell if I'm a match. And so actually in both of our interests for us to figure that out quickly so that you don't waste your time in marketing on me and I don't waste my time on you and money on you. And we just kind of sort that out. And so being really transparent about like, this is who we are and this is who we're not is more helpful for everybody in the long run. Yeah. And probably the biggest issue with smaller businesses, professional service organizations, that sort of thing is that people can't tell the difference. Like, how is this accountant different from this accountant group? How's this realtor different from this realtor? Like a lot of these different people, we can't really distinguish well between their websites because they're very generic.
Right.
So that is, I think, a big issue we run into a lot where people will come to me saying, like, should I be doing video marketing? And I'm like, I'm not clear how you're different from your competition.
Exactly. They jump to tactics first.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's easy to because you have Twitter, you know, you have a lot of social media that's always kind of, you know, see these sorts of tweets and posts that are like, you have to be doing video marketing or you're missing it, or, you know, it's time to do podcasts, or there's kind of this kind of fear-based stuff of like, you need to be on this trend, this bandwagon. But really, if you don't actually figure out the core values and the really who you are, you're going to be just all over the place in terms of trends. And you're going to look really haphazard, kind of like a disheveled zombie.
They messy. No, that makes a lot of sense because we are being bombarded with, you should do video marketing. You should do, you know, you should be on Twitter and Snapchat and Facebook and Pinterest. And, you know, and what happens is I think a lot of entrepreneurs get spread so thin, they're not doing any of it well. And if you don't understand who you are and why you're there to begin with, then you're really setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, I would say you really are. And it's a lot of work without a lot of return if you don't want to get your foundation set to begin with. And once you have your foundation set, then you can make all of your, both your communication and your business decisions based on those values. Yeah. You know, you spelled them out, you're very clear, and then that helps make for your customers a more consistent experience no matter what touch point they have with your business.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I love your dating analogy, because the other thing, as you were talking about that, what I was thinking was, you know, you tend to be attracted to people that have a strong self-identity, mm-hmm. that really understand who they are. I mean, you know, when you think about people that you, you know, you tend to be attracted to, the most charismatic people are the ones that really understand who they are. And I think that's probably the same with businesses. You're going to be attracted to a business that really understands who it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And really stands out. And yeah. so someone can say, oh, this business is like that. Yeah. I get that. Now that's not for me, but I get what they're about.
Yeah.
Or maybe they'll say, that's exactly the kind of business I want to be a part of. But too often we're scared of standing out.
I do see that. I do see that there is a resistance to standing out, and I don't really understand. I mean, do you understand it? I mean, what is that about, do you think? I mean, other than they're afraid they're going to miss out on certain customers, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it comes down to fear.
Yeah.
It comes to fear mm-hmm. and, you know, not trusting that if you're putting something out there that's unique, that there are enough people in our country that would be attracted to that.
Right.
When you're in that sort of thing, people do have a great fear of standing out. And so that's why, you know, when we do things like competitive analysis, oftentimes clients will, you know, I'll show them kind of, okay, this is kind of what peers are doing, this is going on. And they'll start to go, oh yeah, let's do that. Or can we take their tagline?
Oh, no.
You know, or they'll say, yeah, we should copy this and this and this. And I'm like, no. Like yeah. we're not to copy. We're doing this to see what people are doing so we can like do something else.
Right.
And we can zig when they're zagging and that sort of thing. But that is something that, you know, it's a lot safer. It seems a lot safer for people to kind of be like, well, we'll just make sure we blend in, so we're at least like meeting like the general standard for our industry.
Right. Yeah. Well, as in, you know, because a lot of zombies, they walk around in big groups and it's hard to distinguish one from the other.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very much so. And as a small business, like that's a killer.
It is a killer. Absolutely. So you guys talk a lot in the book about characteristics of zombie businesses. So can you maybe explain a few of those characteristics so that people can maybe determine, people who are listening can maybe determine if their business is a zombie business?
Yeah, definitely. So sometimes people are zombie businesses and they don't even really know it.
Right.
Which is interesting. And our book has a couple different places where you can evaluate yourself.
Yes.
Questions, you know, to really think about at the end of the chapter. So we talk a lot about how zombies have some characteristics of that really are reflected in poor communication. So one is that it's haphazard. You know, being haphazard in your communication is when you're running around trying to follow trends, when your business identity, your true values are not coming through necessarily. Zombies, as we mentioned, often tend to be indistinguishable from one another. They tend to be reckless in making poor decisions because they don't have these guiding values that really kind of set their direction of where they're heading. And so sometimes they can come off as quite reckless.
Mm-hmm.
Stiff also is another characteristic of zombies in the sense that they're not flexible and able to adjust to needs of different audiences at different times, because we want you to be clear on your identity and who you are. But you need to be flexible in the sense of meeting needs of audiences. And when you're a zombie, you can't really move very well, right?
Right.
Kind of stiff. And so we do have like a stiff analysis in our book where you can kind of go, gosh, am I inflexible in my approach? That sort of thing. Saying like, we must do a newsletter, or we, you know, really kind of attached to certain areas of our business or stuff that maybe need to be reevaluated or measured, that sort of thing. So those are some zombie traits. And, you know, instead we'd rather you be more human. And humans, you know, great humans are flexible. They're original. They let their true selves shine. They're stable in that they know who they are. Their identity is clear. People kind of know what to expect from them. Like I have certain companies that I kind of know what to expect from them. MailChimp is an example. Very clear on who they are. They tend to be kind of jokey. The little monkey they have gives you a high five after you send out your email campaign. I kind of tend to expect a little bit of lightheartedness from them. And so if you can be, you know, mindful and kind of head towards that human realm and away from the zombie realm, your communication is going to improve tenfold.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, as you were talking about the, you know, how zombies aren't very flexible, you know, a word that's used a lot these days is having, you know, successful businesses have the ability and the courage to pivot when they need to. If they're going down a direction and they realize it's not right or it's not working, then they aren't afraid to pivot to where maybe the research is taking them or where customers are taking them. And, you know, I think that's really important to be able to do that, to pivot and go, you know, in a different direction, you know, sort of fearlessly if needed.
Yeah, I think it's important, especially in times of crisis.
Right.
We have an example in our book about Domino's Pizza, who were kind of getting ready to do a bunch of social media stuff, but hadn't actually done it yet.
Yeah.
And this video came out showing Domino's Pizza employees contaminating food. And it was, this was in 2009, so it's a few years back now. But they really quickly kind of were like, you know what, we need to get on YouTube too. We're going to jump on this and we're really going to immediately address this issue and let people know that we are paying attention, and didn't say, oh, we're not ready for social media yet. They were like, wow, we're in a crisis. And if we don't show up on social media now, we're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a case, I think, where there was flexibility demonstrated. And in other cases, I've seen that as long as your kind of plan for communication and marketing for the year has some flexibility into it, you can like jump on different opportunities mm-hmm. when you see something arise. I can think of a couple of examples off the top of my head. I'm trying to think of which one would be like the best one to explain.
Yeah.
So here's a fun one, I think. and this is an example, I think, of just being really smart and in the moment.
Uh-huh.
In 2015, I'm not a baseball fan, but there was the World Series, and the person at the World Series, the pitcher, I guess it was, of the winning team, received a Chevy Colorado truck. And when that kind of handoff happened from the Chevy manager, this is like happening on TV, he stumbled and he said that the truck had technology and stuff. And it just was this really kind of awkward gaffe in
right.
not professional, that sort of thing. And so it really, you know, started trending on social media. Technology and stuff, and people mm-hmm. kind of laughing and making fun of it, which
right.
was really funny. But the social media manager for Chevy was paying attention and realized like, this is a critical moment where she could just let it be a fumble and they could just try to ignore it or they could joke about it. And so they started joking about it also. And they sent out this really funny tweet that said, truck, yeah, the 2015 Chevy Colorado has awesome hashtag technology and stuff. What a truck. And it was just this kind of really fun thing that got them great media attention for 5 days because they were flexible enough and could laugh at themselves enough that they were human and made this kind of goofy mistake when they were handing off to the World Series winning pitcher, the truck. They made it fun. And I think that's an example of being flexible in the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there is this fear of acknowledging mistakes and gaffes. But the thing is that human beings make them all the time, right? I mean,
definitely.
And businesses are run by human beings. And so they're not perfect. None of our businesses are perfect and we're going to make mistakes. And so, yeah, I mean, that example of being able to sort of embrace that mistake and sort of join in the joke that's really powerful. That's really, and Chevy's that's a big company.
It is. Yeah. It's really endearing and it made them human. You know, so when those mistakes happen, you know, first off, we're assuming these mistakes aren't happening every week, right?
Right.
They're just a mess.
Right.
But if, you know, you are living on your values, you're communicating consistently, and people know what to expect from you, which, you know, hopefully is, you know, honesty, integrity, and all those things that we really value in our businesses we want to work with. When a mistake happens, acknowledging responsibility and either, you know, if it's a small kind of thing like that, you can make a joke of it. It's a bigger sort of thing. You kind of like the dominoes thing, you know, you're addressing it really proactively and sharing empathy with the people who are affected. That can actually endear you to your customers in the longer run.
Yeah. And you mentioned MailChimp a few minutes ago. They actually, you know, you can go online and they have a document called Voice and Tone, and then they also have their brand guidelines online. And like the Voice and Tone is really for the people who write for them. Have you ever seen it? Have you looked
at
that?
Absolutely. I pointed people to it. It's a great model.
It is. It's fantastic. They don't leave anything to chance. I mean, this is a document for the people that write for them and communicate for them. And it's such, they have it down to the T. I mean, it's a beautiful doc. I mean, just in terms of how they communicate about who they are, what they value, and how they want that communicated to customers in such a human and authentic, I mean, authentic gets thrown around, that term gets thrown around a lot, but it is such a human way. I love it.
Yes, they are absolutely a leader in terms of both user experience and I think in communication based off of identity.
Yeah.
I find them to be pretty exceptional. I've gotten to interview a couple different people from there for magazine articles and that sort of thing. And I've been consistently impressed with just the attention that is spent to consistency and to customers and to the experience people are having and making adjustments, right, to keep improving it. And that's why in the whole email marketing world, they are killing their competition. They are like 30% above everybody else in terms of market share. It is just insane how far ahead they are of everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's no wonder. I mean, like I said, I've just always been impressed with just those documents that I've seen from them and just the whole customer experience that they provide. So you mentioned Chevy. Are there a couple of other examples you have of businesses that are really doing a great job of being, as we're saying, fully embodied?
So I think a business that maybe some of your listeners might be familiar with, Buffer.
Oh, yeah. Buffer. I love Buffer.
Yeah. I think they're doing a good example of being fully embodied. So one of their big values that they have kind of just worn on their sleeve and just really been, just really direct about is transparency. Mm-hmm. And I love that because oftentimes businesses aren't transparent. And so they have gone over the top in being transparent. So they provide things online that you or I could access, just members of the general public, things like individual salaries, the equity breakdown of the company, so who owns what, their formula for granting stock options, and even a real-time revenue dashboard. So, you know, after our call, we can go see whether they made money or lost money during our interview here. Uh-huh. And you can kind of just see, oh, this is many people left Buffer, this many people joined Buffer, that sort of thing. It's been really amazing. And I think what impressed me the most about Buffer is that, so they've done this transparency thing that has just been a real model for like others to follow of like, wow, we really could be really just upfront with our employees and upfront with other people about kind of how our company's structured, even though we're private, that when they had a major problem and had to actually lay off people, and they had to lay off like 10% of their team, and this was 2016 of last year, they were very transparent about that. And their CEO wrote about a 3,500 word post, a blog post, because that's where they share a lot of their transparent stuff is on their blog, about the mistake. And he made a heartfelt apology and went on and on about this is what we did wrong and taking full responsibility for it. And I was amazed at the transparency in making errors and mistakes. And the comments on that blog post really attested to how forgiving people are when you are consistent in your identity and who you are. Because people were like, wow, thank you for your transparency. This just makes me like Buffer even more, that kind of stuff. Because they stuck to their values even when they were going to kind of look ugly and look kind of silly. By growing too fast, basically.
Wow, I didn't realize that. Yeah, I use Buffer to, send out everything to all my social media accounts. I stack everything up, you know, every few days or something. So, but I didn't realize they were doing all that. That's awesome. It does make me love them even more. And I was already happy with Buffer, so.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, they shared their methodology for the layoffs. They shared what their projected bank balance would be after the layoffs. They explained, you know, how a couple of the leaders were doing a 40% pay cut. They were very clear saying, like, I had poor judgment in growing the company too fast. I mean, they are very impressive because they are human and they're transparent. And I really think they're doing a good job of living their values, even when it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Want to hide and say, let's not tell anybody about this mistake because this is a big one.
And it can be hard, right? It's not always easy to live your values. And then even as a human being, you have to make choices and the same with businesses. So that's really cool that Buffer's doing that.
I think it's really cool too. You know, I heard a quote not that long ago, and I don't know who said it, but it was like, something really isn't a value until it costs you something.
Ah, nice.
You know, like, is it really a value until you have to like make a choice and maybe something doesn't go in your pocketbook? You don't make as much money because you stick to your value.
Wow. That's pretty powerful.
It is powerful. And I think companies, who really embrace it do, you know, they'll take a hit to their bottom line to stay in line with their values, right? Mm-hmm. Chick-fil-A is a company that is really clear that they're not going to be making any chicken sandwiches on Sundays. They're going to be closed on Sundays, right?
Right.
They could make a lot of money on Sundays, I'm sure. They're an extremely popular fast food restaurant, right?
Yeah.
But they said, I don't care. We're not going to do this on Sundays because of their kind of, you know, Christian background and that sort of thing. And mm-hmm. that's something that they've been really clear and have stuck to. And I think that really does demonstrate a true value.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of, I think it's also made them help them stand out in the fast food industry. I mean,
it absolutely has. Yeah. They've got loyal followers, you know,
absolutely.
And there are other people who don't like them and their stance, but they're very clear on like, this is what we believe.
Right. Right.
This is what's important to us. And that's okay. I mean, we have tons of people in the world, tons of people, even if you live in a small town, there's tons of people who might be able to use your services. So you can be who you are and find those people that are attracted to your services and who you are.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So, for, you know, entrepreneurs who are just starting out or for those who have maybe been in business for a while and they just, you know, aren't seeming to get any traction. It seems like, you know, a lot of times this issue of business identity might be at the core of that. First of all, new entrepreneurs need to develop a business identity. Those who have been in business for a while and don't seem to be growing might need to revisit or maybe build their own business identity. Are there some simple things that these folks can do to either establish or improve their business identity?
So I think one of the key things is to actually have it documented. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I like to say nothing's really real unless it's on paper.
Right. Well, that's true. Yeah.
If it's just in your head, like what your values are, and you may think, oh, I totally live for my values. Well, you know, can you write those down? And can you at times check your behavior against those values? Especially if you're talking about any company that's more than one person. I mean, I suggest writing it down even if it's just one person, but if you're starting, like maybe you're a group of five people, or three people, those need to be written out and explicitly talked about what these values mean to everybody. So how one person might interpret a value might be different than how you interpret a value, right?
Right.
And that could be honesty, that could be transparency, that sort of thing. Well, how transparent is transparent?
Right.
So being really explicit about this conversation so that everybody's on the same page and then talking about it regularly, like this isn't something you document and then you just stick it on the wall so that, you know, visitors who come to your office can see it or stick it in a drawer. You know, that's something that should be like on a post-it next to your computer. So you're thinking about it when you're writing that blog post or that sort of thing. And I know some of the people here might be kind of interested in content marketing, and content marketing takes time. So that can take 12 to 18 months to really get any sort of traction. Mm-hmm. And people often just quit before we even had the chance. So if you kind of get the consistent identity going and then do it consistently for a good 18-month period and reassess where you are, then you kind of make an informed choice about is this working, is this not working, that sort of thing. Because most of the time, I think some people quit too early.
Oh, yeah. There's have you read Seth Godin's book called The Dip?
I haven't read The Dip, no.
I just read it recently. And there does, you know, it talks about, and I don't want to try to paraphrase Seth Godin because he's just too awesome. But, you know, it's about, you know, knowing when to quit and when to keep going. And, you know, because we all experience that dip. And it's very easy to quit when you feel like, well, I've been doing this for 6 months, you know, and, you know, nothing's happening. I'm not getting any revenue from this or any recognition from this. And so people quit when, you know, if they kept going, like you're saying, content marketing, for instance, can take a good year to 18 months to really get any traction in the marketplace. If you quit at 6 months, then what's going to happen is you're just going to be starting over again with something else, and then you're going to experience another dip. Everything has a dip to it.
Yes.
You know, and you have to make that decision, you know, is this a point where there's just no way forward, or is this where it's like, okay, if I push through this, the rest of my competitors are going to stop now because it's, you know, it's just sucking right now. But if I keep on, then I'm going to come out ahead, because a lot of people quit during that dip where they're feeling like nothing's working. I'm not getting any revenue from this. And for those who push through that, they're the ones that are going to find success.
I would agree with you. And I would also say that I think sometimes more really thinking through on the front end for a business.
Yep.
So thinking about your identity and your values, and then thinking about, you know, where your audience is, because that's certainly important, right? Okay. Right. Like, is my audience listening to podcasts? Where are they doing? But your audience is not just in one place. They're typically in more than one place, and thinking about knowing my strengths, my weaknesses, knowing who I am, like what is the form that's going to be best for me to be able to sustain? Mm-hmm. Is it a podcast? Is it writing a blog regularly? What is it? But like find that one form that you feel like I can sustain this because I enjoy it, you know, because I actually love writing. So I'm happy to do blog posts. That'll be really cool. I mean, there are going to be weeks where I'll probably be tired and I won't want to do it, but I do love writing at its base. I think kind of being more strategic and smart on the front end of just picking one thing that really works well and then sticking with that for the 12 to 18 months to kind of see if you can get traction is a much better use of time than a few different things, some of which you're really not into and you just feel like you're obligated to do it. Like, I really don't like Pinterest, but I feel like I should do Pinterest or that sort of thing.
Right.
Getting out of that mentality, I think really helps. And then you can be persistent on those dips because you haven't picked something that's so out of what your wheelhouse is that you don't really want to be doing anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's such great advice. You know, that we need to really take, because it is so interested to be attracted by all those bright, shiny objects out there and want to do everything. And that's just a huge mistake. That, I mean, I've certainly made that mistake again and again. And finally, after, you know, so much torture, I finally decided, you know, I'm going to focus on one thing and do that well and stick with it. So
yes, you're more likely to stick with it if it's something you enjoy and that you can do well and you're getting better over time and that sort of thing. And you can't really do that when you're split up between like three or four different things, you know, but if you can find one thing, like, that's great. And it also applies to us personally. You know, when I think about what social media I want to be active on professionally, it's Twitter and LinkedIn for me. Like, those are my two. And LinkedIn is more important for me, honestly, in terms of getting work and that sort of thing. So on any given day, I'm like going to spend more time on LinkedIn than I am on Twitter. And Facebook is just for like personal fun whenever I happen to check it on time, you know, not professional at all. So we can apply this to our personal lives as well.
Absolutely. Well, this has been super, super helpful, Melissa. Can you tell us where we can find the Zombie Business Cure?
Yeah. So, it's absolutely available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes and Noble. It's also available through your local independent bookstore if you want to just ask them to order it. But if you just Google in Zombie Business Cure, you will end up at either our website or Amazon and someplace where you can order the book.
Yeah. And I'll also include the link to it in the show notes. And I know you guys, do have a website for it. I know you're going to be adding some more information to that website as you go along for professionals and for educators and some extra bonus materials for them.
Yeah, we're hoping to get that up during the summer. And we also keep up there our events where we're speaking. So if we happen to be speaking somewhere near you, you can come check us out in person. We're speaking at different conferences and can certainly give workshops wherever as well.
Yeah. And then for your own consulting business, what's the URL for that?
Yeah, it's my melissaegg.com. So my last name is Eggleston, so it's just E-G-G, M-E-L-S-S-A-E-G-G.com. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'll include the link to that too, because you're doing a lot of cool work. And so you actually do consulting for people all over the country, so they can, wherever they are, they can reach you if they need some help.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always happy to chat on the phone. Sometimes people just need to chat on the phone to kind of point them in the right direction. And I'm always happy to hop on the phone and do that as a starting point.
All right. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Melissa. I really, really appreciate it. I want to have you back just to talk about user experience.
Oh, I would love to come back. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Wow. What a great conversation with Melissa, huh? I learned so much, and I hope you did too. For me, some of the key takeaways were things like, you know, understanding what your core values are as a business, and then living those values can help you develop content marketing that, one, expresses those values really clearly, but the other thing, it can help you connect more authentically with the customers that you want and who appreciate those values. And the other thing was that
It's this idea of not being afraid of standing out and not being afraid of being different than your competitors. Because if you stand out, if you are different, it doesn't mean that you're going to be missing out on all these customers. What it means is that you'll be getting more of the right customers for your business. And also that it means that you'll be the right business for those customers. It's that whole dating analogy that Melissa mentioned. So I thought that was a really cool way of explaining things. And the other thing I thought really stood out for me was that when Melissa mentioned that, you know, when you're doing content marketing, it is not something that's going to be a success overnight. And if you are looking for something that's going to be that, you know, first of all, I don't know anything that's a success overnight, but content marketing certainly isn't. It's a, you have to be in it for the long haul. And in order to see all of the really wonderful rewards it can reap. And, you know, she mentioned, you know, having to give it 12 to 18 months before you really start seeing clear results from it. So I think that that's really important to remember, because it's easy to get discouraged after you've been doing something for a few months and you're not seeing, revenue from it, or it doesn't seem like it's moving the needle, you know, enough. But, you know, sticking with something, there's a lot to be said for that. And, you know, figuring out what you want to focus on instead of trying to do, you know, trying to be on five different social media platforms, pick one and go with it. Instead of trying to do, you know, three or four different content marketing tactics, pick one and be really, really good at it. So lots of great information that Melissa provided, and, you know, a lot more great information in the book that she and Julie Lellis wrote called The Zombie Business Cure. So be sure to check it out, and I'll leave a link to that in the show notes for you. So speaking of figuring out what you want to focus on, I am focusing on this podcast and would totally appreciate it if you would help me spread the word about it, and if you'd leave a review for me on iTunes or Stitcher so that others can discover the Smarter Content Marketing Lab podcast. That would be pure awesomeness. Links to what we discussed with Melissa are in the show notes, so be sure to check those out. And as always, if you want to reach out to me with questions or with ideas for the podcast, please email me at Michelle, that's with one L, at smarterwritinglab.com. Always love to hear from you. I look forward to seeing you in the lab next time. Until then, go out and create awesome content that builds an awesome business. Thank you.